Hello and welcome to another episode of Django Chat. This week we're joined by Georg Holzman, the creator of Ophonic, which handles audio processing and uses Django. We'll dive into all those things, how to scale it, and it should be a great discussion. So, Carlton, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Will. Thank you very much. Very well. How are you, Georg?
Yeah, thanks. I'm fine, and thanks for the invitation. I'm curious what to speak about here.
Oh, I think there's too many things to speak about. I guess let's start with, how did you get into programming? And there's so much we can speak about the audio part, but also around the Django part. So maybe what's your background? How did you get into programming?
Yeah, so I got into programming already quite early. So I think I was in primary school, and my dad always had a old computer, and I always managed to destroy the computer and play around with it. And at some point, yeah, I started programming. I don't know why, actually. I think some friend was showing it to me. And the first programming language was Turbo Pascal. And then I learned C++ and C and all these more low-level things. And yeah, and into Python, I came actually quite late. It was at the university.
Okay.
Did you study computer science there then?
Not really. I actually studied audio engineering.
Okay.
But this was a lot. It was not really only audio. It was more like electrical engineering and computer science and a lot of signal processing, machine learning and all these things. And so basically it was computer science, yes.
Okay. So you're doing like high-low filters and, you know, all of those fancy things there.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And this is also why I got into Python at some point, because we were using for a project NumPy and SciPy and all these things when they were at their early stage. And yeah, so I came into Python and I loved the language a lot. And so I got into programming.
Okay. And this led straight onto Ophonic then, which we should say is your... So tell us about Ophonic. What is Ophonic?
Yeah, Ophonic was built a little bit later then. And yeah, this is basically also about audio processing and some other things. So it started as a web service. Now there are also some desktop apps, but you can basically upload an audio file, and then this file is analyzed on our servers, and then according to the analysis, it is processed and encoded into different formats and then distributed to other services and things like that.
Right. But this sounds, I mean, this is using exactly the techniques that you studied at school, right? The signal processing, the cleaning up.
Yes, exactly.
The sound qualities. Yeah, okay. And so I guess the question is most of that done in Python, or is that done in, you know, other languages?
Yeah, the signal processing and machine learning things are mainly built in Python. So we use a lot of NumPy and the machine learning libraries, different machine learning libraries. And yeah, also some parts are also written in C, so which are optimized a little bit. And for that, we mostly use Zeiten, if you know this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is basically, I guess everyone on your podcast knows this, but it's basically a compiler from Python to C. And yeah, then we also had to build a web system around it, and I think this was 2009 or 2010, and back then there was basically everyone was using Ruby on Rails.
Yeah,
and
okay.
This was very popular, and I was thinking, yeah, I don't want to get in a whole another software stack, and I was looking at what's going on in the Python world as well, and found Django, and yeah, since then I'm a Django user.
Okay, fantastic. So you've been through the long haul. You've, you know, like you've seen the introduction of, I don't know, let's say migrations and the big changes
around
1.5 and then 1.7. And
I started with South. This was the framework before the migrations were introduced.
Right.
And yeah, but my main focus was never mainly on the web tools. It was more on the signal processing and machine learning part. And the web tools, I just discovered them by next to the other things. You know, it was never my main focus.
Yeah, okay.
I just had to learn it because I needed them.
And so, go on, Will.
No, you go ahead, Carlton.
Well, I was going to say, so is the main the main uses for Django here is to build the API around the data processing pipelines that you have.
Yes, so there are various things in our system. So of course, the first thing is the web GUI, so how you see the website or how you can create these productions, these audio productions. Then, so this is the client side, front end. Then there is the server side. So after you upload an audio file, you have to process and analyze it, which takes quite some processing power. So we need to have a distributed system where we can process all the audio files. So a task queue. For that, we use this DJ Celery and RabbitMQ.
Okay, and how have you found working with Celery and scaling RabbitMQ and things like that over the years? Because I mean, you've been obviously at this for quite a while now, and so you'll have seen it evolve. You must have some war stories there.
I'd like to add too, I found Ophonic. I've never had an issue with it. I mean, just last night I was having an issue with our podcast host, which seems far simpler than what you're doing. So however you're doing it, it's very speedy, and I've never had an issue, which is unusual dealing with audio for me online.
Okay, that's great. Well, there were of course issues in the past, but not for you.
Nope.
For us, RabbitMQ and Celery worked quite well. I mean, there were some issues at some point. Also, at some migrations, there were some problems, but no major things. So I cannot tell anything bad about it.
No, but it's not so much bad. It's more like as you scale out these things.
Well, Carlton has feelings on Celery.
Yeah, and on RabbitMQ, you know, I've had scars of trying to make that work how I've wanted to, and now I'm for quite a while now. I've been firmly in the Redis camp and using that and working with that well and finding that's very scalable, but. You know, RabbitMQ is still there and still has lots of adherence. So I'm, you know, just wondering, you know, the reason I ask is to try and draw out your experience, which sounds very positive.
Yeah, so our setup is maybe a bit special because we have only very long running tasks.
Right.
Because if you process one audio file, so this usually takes, it depends on your file, but it takes quite long. It's not, there are not thousands of small tasks. There's just few long running tasks. So yeah, I think for our use case, it does not matter much if you use RabbitMQ or something else. So it's basically the same, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Do you think that with your setup, it seems like if there was ever a case for potentially serverless, it would be what you have, right? Because I imagine you have spikes of activity and then inactivity. I wonder what does your traffic look like? Do you have those spikes or... is it more kind of level? How does it look? Because I know you're global.
Yes, we have these spikes, but they are not that big, I would say. So it's the average is, so the standard deviation is not so big, I would say. Because, yeah, you know, in Europe they are processing now maybe, and then in the US it's a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not such a problem. But of course the infrastructure, so maybe let's speak a bit about the infrastructure.
Yeah, yeah.
So we do not use Amazon AWS or things like that. So we have root servers, which are rented because they are much cheaper for our use case because we need a lot of memory and a lot of processing power.
Yeah.
Therefore, of course, many root servers don't do much most of the time. But then when we have spikes in processing, we need all of them. So of course these spikes are important and determine how many servers we have to use. But in the end, it's still much cheaper compared to AWS or other services.
And so are you managing the actual hardware yourself there, or is that hardware managed? Because this is one of the sort of selling points that Amazon tell us, or you know, it's not just Amazon; it's all these providers. They sort of say, look, you're not having to go to the data center to change the hard disk these kind of activities that you had to do back when you were renting space in a colo.
Yeah, no, we don't manage the hardware, so the hardware is managed, but we have to manage the whole software. So from the operating system up to all the stack you have to install. but the hardware is managed. So, I mean, maybe you know this hoster, it's Hetzner from Germany. They are a very big hoster in Germany and very cheap for their root servers.
Right, okay.
Can you give us a sense of how big is the Ophonic team and kind of the sort of traffic you're dealing with now versus, I guess, 10 years ago, or what, 8-9 years ago when you started? Because, you know, to me, you're just a service that I've seen recommended and that works. So I'd love to hear more about, it's the company, if there are other people involved, and as much as you feel like you can say about that.
Yes, sure. So, so we are about 5 people.
Okay.
And, I mean, you mean the amount of audio we process?
Sure. Just how has traffic
evolved? Okay.
You know, how has that changed over time? I mean, has it been linear? Have you spiking?
Well, that's interesting. It's not linear. I mean, it is a little bit linear as well, of course. But then there are always spikes if some other user groups find out about this service, and then they bring in a lot of more people. Then there is a spike, but then it just evolves linear. So it spikes and linear. And
yeah. Sorry, I was going to ask, because I know that. So when we started using this podcast, we started using a service called Zencastr, which I found out uses you. So I'm curious, what's sort of the mix of services that use Ophonic versus people like us who do it directly? Do you have a sense of what that mix is, kind of companies versus individuals using it directly?
Okay, yeah, this is maybe half-half. So we have an API where, for the other listeners, we have an API where other services can integrate our services and algorithms, so that the users of the third-party services don't have to know that there is a Ophonic inside, like you did with Zencastr, for example.
Right.
And so there are some companies which are integrating our services into their systems, and then there is our website and direct interface, like you are using now, I guess. And so this is, the share is half-half, I would say.
What's your sense of how people find you? Because I think the only reason I found you is because I think I saw Tim Ferriss mention that he used you directly, and I thought, oh, that sounds like what we're using with Zencastr. And then Carlton and I had a number of issues with doing it web-based, and so it was really kind of circumstantial that I even found Ophonic itself. Is there a standard path for how clients kind of find you?
No, I don't know. So this basically, we don't make any marketing or things like that, so usually it's word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Especially in the podcast.
So it's kind of like the classic, if you build it, they'll come. You built it and they came.
Yeah. So at the beginning we had, all started with a podcaster from Germany, because I was listening to his podcast, and he always told, everything is so complicated, all the audio things and generating all the file formats. And then I thought, well, that's actually quite easy. So let's build something. And it started with some small scripts. And this is really one of the famous podcasters here in Germany. So after we released it, a lot of people used us already.
Right, okay. So you had a kind of critical mass to begin.
Yeah, this was... And we got a lot of good feedback, of course, and lots of training data and test data. And then we got a grant from the government here in Austria. So we got some money, basically, and could build a prototype or continue to build the system. And with this money, I could hire someone who helped to build the system, and then actually another one as well. And then after this grant, already some other podcasters got to know our system. I don't know why, but somehow it spread over the ocean to the US. And there were other people which were playing around with it. And afterwards, after this grant, we had to introduce a pricing model. So in the beginning, everything was free for everyone.
Right.
And then we had to introduce some pricing, because otherwise we could not live from it anymore.
Yeah, because you initially were funded by the government grant.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right, okay, fine. And that
but
ran
that
out.
Seems like that maybe let you... you seem to have a long-term approach to this, whereas, I used to be out in San Francisco, and if you take venture capital money, you pretty much, within 18 months and really 12 months, you have some very high goals you need to hit. You're not allowed to take your time,
yeah.
Really. So So it sounds like that's fantastic that you had that ability instead of being pressured to introduce things faster before they were ready.
Yeah, sure. And well, the nice thing we had in our situation is that we did not have to do any fancy marketing or other kind of strategies how to get more users. I mean, that's good to do if you're interested in these things, but we were all engineers basically, and we did not know anyone who can do these other things. So we just tried to avoid them.
Well, this is marketing now. I've seen you've been on a couple of podcasts. Sure. So that's marketing.
Of course.
That's amazing. Well, so a question I had is, are there, when you created this, were there any competing services that do that? And kind of what do you see in terms of competition? Because it seems, I'm not aware of any, but it seems like such a, now that we have it as part of our post-production flow, I can't imagine doing our podcast without it.
There are no direct competitors which build the same. Because we are, of course, very, very specialized into this podcasting use case or also other spoken word recordings, I would say, like conference recordings and lectures and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are, of course, other audio software companies like iZotope, which more build their tools for editing. So basically, there is no such automated way like we do it. So. That's why we try to focus on this automation and workflow aspect and not try to build an editor, which would be, of course, also very useful. But it's, of course, a lot of work if you want to build it right. And then you get into direct competition to Audition or iZotope or other companies.
Yeah. And those tools, those tools are super super powerful, but super complicated. And you know, I consider myself an audio beginner, and there's just no way I can apply the right filters and, you know, in anything like a time efficient way. Like, so for me to be able to upload the file and it comes back and with the noticeable difference in sound quality, you think, yeah, that's amazing. That's just brilliant.
Yeah. So this is of course also disadvantages. So in our system, basically you get, This was exactly the initial goal when we started the system, so that users which don't have a lot of audio knowledge, or also users which have lots of audio which cannot be handled manually, so that they can just use this tool and get out audio which is okay. But of course, if you have very specialized use cases and you want to get out every detail, then these editor tools are, of course, much more powerful, because you can really work on every detail. But of course, it needs more time and knowledge.
Yeah. But I guess one thing they always talk about in product development is to focus on your particular niche and
don't
worry about trying to serve the other niche. So, you know, that you don't have these features is a selling point, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very clear what you do. Well, so maybe we can talk about some of those features, because there's a lot that are awesome. I wonder, what would you say, what are the main features that people kind of come to you with? I mean, for us, I mean, when I'm doing the audio files, I love that you have the presets just in terms of the web base. That's great that, you know, because we do the same thing for every podcast, so I can just load our presets. And then we usually do, you know, basically go for almost everything. So the compression, leveling, normalization, noise, hum. I guess that's a broad question, but as you think of the features that you have now on the site, what do you think are the core features, and then we can get into some of the more advanced ones, because I know you have some new features you've just launched.
Yes. So I would say the most important feature where everything started is our leveler. So what does it do? It levels out the audio, which means that if you have multiple speakers, like we are having a conversation now, then all these speakers can have different levels and loudness values, and you have to balance them, so otherwise you would always have to use your volume control and adjust for the levels. But this is actually a very complicated task, because it is easy if you just have speakers, but in audio you also have then bigger parts where there is, for example, just background noise. Then of course you should not amplify this background noise like you would do it with speakers. Or then there are also music parts, which should be handled quite differently, because in music you want to have more inner dynamics. And if you have speakers, you want to sound them equally loud, but music should have some differences, of course. And therefore, mm-hmm. you have to analyze the audio first and see where are different speakers, where are music parts, where are just background noises and things like that. So basically, like an audio engineer would do it, and then you have to balance these different parts and use compressors and limiters and things like that.
So you said you're using machine learning for a lot of this. So when you're talking about the different parts, I'm imagining, you know, my machine learning thinking and think, well, okay, so are you tagging particular parts as this kind of, so this is speech, this is music, this is, you know, some other category, and then you'll apply a different filter or set of filters depending on what gets tagged by the machine learning algorithm.
Yes, exactly. So we analyze the audio and classify various things like different speakers, music parts, then different noise parts, or if the background noise changes, for example. This is another algorithm we have. It's called noise reduction. So basically, this algorithm first analyzes the audio and sees where are different background noise scenarios. For example, if you record in a room and then we go outside, then there is another background noise scenario outside. So we have to segment the audio first in these parts and then do noise reduction in the first part and then the second one.
Right. And there's no tooling to do that in something like Audacity. You'd have to do it by hand. You'd have to sort of manually identify the segments.
Yes. In most of the editors, you do this by hand. And basically, we always try to automate these steps you have to do by hand. We try to automate these things by machine learning and then just apply the algorithms like you would do it in an audio editor, for example.
Okay. Fantastic.
Wow. And then you also have, I mean, there's chapter marks, which I believe that's something you had before the sort of Apple Podcasts and stuff had as a feature. Is that right?
Yes, I think in Apple Podcasts, that's not really true. So this is a very complicated topic. because there is so much confusion about it. So what is chapter marks? A chapter mark is basically just a timestamp and a title. So you say at this time, this chapter starts like video does it quite long already. And the problem is with audio that there are many file formats like MP3, MP4 or Opus or whatever. And usually these chapter marks were only defined for video. So in the MP4 container, everything was defined quite well. It is still very complicated, but at least it was defined. And usually at the beginning, Apple was mostly using MP4 audio, so AAC audio in an MP4 container. And the Apple podcast app always, or since very long, supported chapter marks in MP4 files. But most podcasters use MP3 files, so they did not recognize chapters in MP3 files. And there was a very old specification for MP3, so for ID3, which is the metadata standard for MP3, how to put chapter marks also in MP3 files, but nobody used this specification. And yeah, then we just implemented the specification basically, and then more and more podcatchers added support for it. And I think now, since last year, also the Apple podcast app supports MP3 chapters as well.
Right, good. Because if enough files are using it, then they'll have to support it.
Yes, it seems so.
Yeah, fine.
Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of mobile apps, I mean, I'm so impressed by, I keep finding new features that you have. I mean, you have mobile apps as well, right? For Ophonic, for Android and iOS.
Yeah.
And so how recently was that? How did that come about, right? Because that's another thing to build and maintain on top of everything else.
Yes. Basically, we started the mobile app because a friend of the first developer at Ophonic wanted to do a project with us. And he's a web and mobile developer. And yeah, now he works at Facebook, so he's quite good in these things. So he said, yes, he wants to build a iOS app for us. And the problem in iOS was long that you cannot upload audio files in a website. I think they changed it now. But for a long time, you could not select audio files and upload them to Ophonic, for example. So the idea was to build just a simple recorder and then use our API in the mobile app so that you can basically export files from your phone to a Phonik. And yeah, this was the start basically. And then we also did an Android version. And on Android, the situation was even more complicated because there is no usable audio editor on Android. And then we thought, well, we could also build a little audio editor.
Right, brilliant.
And yeah.
And so, how does that go with device compatibility? Because that's the great that's the great challenge on Android, right? Is it works on your Samsung that you've got in the office, but not on, you know, any device out there in the street.
Yeah, but actually there are not so many problems. But of course, that's more difficult.
Okay, interesting. And so you talk about your API there, and I guess that's built with Django and Django REST framework?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you have problems, talk to Carlton.
Ah, you are developing this?
Yeah.
Well, he's the co-maintainer.
Okay, very nice. So thanks a lot.
Well, no, you know, I don't do too much. But if you, so you've been using that from, I mean, REST framework for, well, it wasn't quite around in 2010, but like 2012, 2013?
I think, yeah. I have to look when we released
our API. Yeah, I'd have to look
API.
Up the exact date. Right.
When you think of all these technologies that you're juggling, I assume the web piece just sort of follows the audio part? Or how much time do you spend on just scaling up the web part? Because that's sort of the front door for everything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious of, you know, where you spend your time now, given that you're at scale and you're still, we can talk about, I know you just introduced a new leveling algorithm.
Yeah, I mean, this is always different. So sometimes we work more on the web part or other parts, and sometimes more on the algorithms. But yeah, I mean, scaling was not so much of an issue, I would say. So, well, basically, we always have to fix some things if we see it will get very hot. but yeah, actually, I mean, you know, if the traffic goes up, we just rent some more servers. So basically, that's not so complicated.
Right.
Because in our case, I mean, the website itself does not need much scaling because we don't have 100,000 of users every minute, of course.
Yeah, so I'm imagining you could run the website on, you know, a medium-sized server and it would chug away quite happily and give you lots of spare capacity. And then the big need to scale is the back-end processing units.
Exactly. So the database or all the web front-end and things, they are just on one big root server. And then we have various other servers for the audio processing and for the long running tasks.
Right, okay.
Processed audio files, I believe is it 30 days that you store it and then it goes away? Is that correct?
Yes,
now?
21 days.
21. I assume that came about because you looked around and said, oh my God, we have all this data. Or did you have that from the beginning, a sort of a limit on how long you would host processed audio?
I think we had this quite early because otherwise you would need a lot of storage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yet there are, of course, also data protection reasons.
And can I ask there, do you store on disks, physical disks on your rented servers, or are you using cloud storage for?
No, we store on our root servers on the disks.
Right. Okay. So it really is all hardware in the data center.
Yes, exactly.
Fantastic.
I always like to ask this question. So if you could just wave a magic wand and add a new feature to Ophonic, what would it be?
Oh.
Because I assume you have, I mean, obviously, I don't have a sense of what is truly challenging or what you think your customers are demanding. I mean, but yeah, I'm curious where you see that need, or, you know, if you had all this time, you would spend it.
Well, that's difficult to say. Our future feature list is very long.
Okay, yeah, sure. Or maybe there's something that you don't even know how to tackle it, but it's sort of an unresolved problem in processing audio. Because again, Carlton and I don't know that space at all.
Yeah, okay, into this direction. What would be really cool is if you have, let's say you have very bad audio like MP3 with 32 kilobits. So everything is compressed already completely and you can't hear anything about it anymore. And mm-hmm. then one could build an algorithm which makes the audio as the original again.
Right, okay.
This would be great.
Yeah.
That really is a magic wand.
But yeah, at some point you will lose information and then it's difficult to restore the information again.
But there are you do see these kind of AI or ML applications where they kind of guess what the missing data is and interpolate that, and they, you know, sometimes come up with good results.
Yes. So there are of course also people which are trying exactly that with badly encoded audio. But yeah, this is of course not possible for every situation, unfortunately.
One of the features among the existing features you have that actually we're not using, which people have asked for, is you link in with speech recognition, right? Where someone can link up a third-party transcription
service that does use AI. Yes, so this would be AI. Another wish. So a perfect speech recognition system.
Yeah. Well, and was that something that you had, again, from the beginning, or something that users asked for, that integration? Because it looks really nice, because that is another step in the tool chain of producing a podcast where do the leveling and then transcription. I mean, it's something we should add.
Yes, this was not from the beginning. So, but this was always very interesting for us because, especially for podcasting, you know, podcasts are not search able. So if you would have a transcript, then you can search within the podcast. So that's, of course, perfect. But
yeah.
Some years ago, there were no services which produced a reasonable output for a reasonable price.
Well said.
And yes, it was actually, I think, 2 years ago or 3 years ago when the first API was the... No, it was not the first one, but one of the first ones was the Google Cloud Speech API, which had an acceptable quality and also a reasonable price. And yeah, now there are various other APIs as well which can do that. So, and back to the beginning, so actually we wanted to build our own speech recognition system, but then we thought we cannot do everything. But it's because it's really very time consuming, especially if you want to build that for multiple languages. So you have to have specialists for every language and a lot of data for every language. That's why we decided to integrate various third-party services for speech recognition. So we still do our own pre-processing and slice the audio into small parts, so cut out the music parts and take out only the speakers, and then send these slices to the external services, to the speech recognition services, and then combine it again so that you have the time codes in the transcript and so that you know at which time who is speaking what.
We should be using this, Will. Why aren't we using this? This sounds amazing.
Use the royal we, Carlton. You're welcome to help on that. Yeah, I think it's so brilliant how you've stayed kind of within your lane yet still expanding features, because I mean, podcasts in general are going through quite a bit of consolidation right now, but it seems like what you're doing is so much better and so hard to do well that it's not really as maybe appealing for Spotify or someone to say, oh, we'll just duophonic, or perhaps maybe or is that an existential threat, do you think, down the line? That one of these places will say, we'll just scoop that part in. Because again, unless you really know what you're doing, it seems very difficult to have a high quality podcast without using a tool like Ophonic.
Well, that's not true. If you're an audio engineer, you can just do it yourself, of course.
Sure. But that's what 1%, if that, you know, everyone else who's,
thanks. But to your question, yeah, I think our service is just very specialized and there is just a lot of time already put into it, how to really optimize it for this use case. I mean, of course, someone else can build similar things, but it's of course a lot of work and you would need, I think, quite a bigger team than we are if you don't build it for yourself. And
sure.
And yeah, I don't think that there is so much money in it that you will throw a 20 people team on it, but I don't know.
Yeah, right. So it's a nice niche, and yeah, if you, as long as you stay the right size and don't scale up too big.
Yeah, maybe
you can survive in that space.
Can you give us a sense of how many? What metric do you use for size? Is it the size of files processed? Is it hours? What when you internally look at your metrics, what are the? How do you manage growth? Because I think that there's a number of different ways to potentially measure that.
Usually we take, I mean, also for our users, the important thing is the length of the audio file. So in our system, mm-hmm. you need 2 hours of audio is free for everyone in our system. And if you process more audio, then you can buy additional credits, and the credits are in hours of audio. So if you have 1 hour of credits, you can process 1 hour of audio file. So therefore, of course, the most important measure, I would say, is the hours of audio we process, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Well, because I guess, yeah, because audio files can be, 1 hour can be, I mean, yeah, very different in size. Was that a...
Yes. So
that seems smart from a marketing perspective, but so for someone like you who really knows the audio, I mean, the costs could be wildly different for 1 hour of, one file versus another.
So yes, the size of the audio file itself does not say much, because if you have an MP3 file compared to an WAV file with a very big bit size, then the MP3 file is very small, of course. But then if you process the file, you have to decode the file again to get the raw data. So, and then it doesn't matter if it was an MP3 or WAV file, because you have the same, you need the same processing amount or processing power for it.
Oh, interesting. So I'm curious, because you went to university for audio engineering. What did you think you were going to be doing at this point in your career? And kind of what are your friends from university doing? Because I'm sure they're not all doing startups.
No, it's very different. So, well, actually, after university, I did my master's studies here in Austria. And then I started a PhD in Germany, Berlin, okay, also about machine learning and audio. This field is called music information retrieval. So where you try to extract information out of audio with machine learning techniques. But yeah, then I did not finish this PhD because basically I was the only one there which did these things. And then I started the job at the web company and get to know all these web things. Also Django, so they also use Django there. And yeah, then I thought, okay, I can also build something for myself. And I also get to know this podcaster, which always had this problem with audio processing and encoding. And I just tried to build these things myself.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like the perfect pipeline. You know, you've done the signal processing, you've done the machine learning, you're into the audio stuff, you've done the web programming, it's like you've got all the parts together and you've just created this awesome business out of it. That's super.
Exactly. I still had no idea about doing business, but but yeah, that's the easiest part.
Another lesson, isn't it?
So did you go to a web place that was doing audio stuff, or did you just separately go to a web place and then later said, oh, I can combine these two?
No, it was not about audio. It was something completely else. But at that time, I was interested in web things, because I did never do big web projects. So I just wanted mm-hmm. to get into this topic. And yeah, for that, it was quite well.
Yeah. Well, it's still the case, certainly in the US, that you can't, it's very difficult to learn web in school. There's some efforts on it, but basically it has to be hands-on. And even something like Django is largely not taught at all, and if it is taught, it's by an adjunct and it's sort of an elective. So that's, hopefully that will change, but it's hard to get a backbone in web technologies, even though the majority of undergraduate computer science graduates probably go work on something web related. So there's definitely a educational mismatch.
I mean,
there right
in the
now
end, you just have to do it, because all the resources are out in the web, of course, and you just have to do it and learn it by yourself.
Yes, spoken like an engineer. So what are you working on right now?
Yeah, so as I said in the beginning, so Afonic is started as a web service with this Django Bard and etc. But we also have a desktop application with our algorithms. So they don't include all the features of the web service, but the advantage here is, of course, that you don't have to do the processing in the cloud, and you don't have to upload files. So the processing is just done on your computer, which needs, of course, processing power, but you don't have to upload, download. And yeah, we also have a different pricing model for this desktop app. So it's just a one-time purchase, varies in the web service. You have to buy credits. So based on how much you process. But yeah, what I wanted to tell is that we are working on a new version of the desktop software at the moment, because it was very difficult to get all these Python and machine learning tools to desktop computers. And especially difficult was the GUI part, because we used in the desktop apps, we used this WX widgets framework with their Python bindings. And it was so frustrating and so difficult. And now we did rewrite everything with web-based tools. So we use now Electron and
okay, so it's Electron
combined with Python. But yeah, Electron is still a very big framework and not so nice to handle. But at least now everything is HTML-based, the whole user interface. And the backend is all done in Python. And so as a long-term goal, we could maybe use the same interface for the web and for the desktop version and just reuse all the components and use Python as the processing engine.
And are you bundling Python in the application?
Yes.
So are you using like the PyB project there or something similar?
No, we are using, well, there are various ways how you can do that. First, we are compiling everything to C with Titan and all these tools.
Okay.
And we are using this tool is called PyInstaller, which creates such a bundle with Python and all the all the dependencies you have. And then this is bundled into one binary, and you can afterwards distribute this binary.
Okay, fantastic. And then that will, because that's Electron-based, that will be on Windows and Mac and Linux as well.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, and then the Electron app just also takes this Python binary and includes it in their framework.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Too many tools.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Python doesn't really have a good story for, I mean, it's good on the command line. It's good for building application. It doesn't have this story about desktop integration or even front end web integration. So,
yeah, well. Know. It is good for desktop, I think, but the missing part is the GUI part.
Yeah,
I would say.
The GUI, yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this story. We love using Ophonic, and I actually, what I love in a way too, is that the only reason I thought that maybe you use Django is I saw the sign-up page, and you're using /accounts and username, email, password, and I thought, oh, that looks like Django, and I just sent you an email, and it's like, oh yeah, it is Django.
Yeah.
So there's all these, you know, a big thing for us in this podcast is to try to highlight all the different ways Django is being used in all these different realms, which are largely kind of hidden, because it's, you know, for you, it's a sort of a secondary thing, but still a key part of your, you know, pipeline of your process.
Yeah, and what I find quite important is that Django is now already quite old, and it still evolves, and it's still a good choice if you would start today, I would say.
That is the perfect end.
And this is, of course, very important if you are a small company like we are, so you cannot rebuild everything from scratch after 5 years.
Yeah, no, but also as well, you need to know that Django is going to continue working.
Yeah.
You know, the next release isn't going to totally change the API or, you know.
Exactly.
Other such things. And those stability guarantees and the deprecation policy are important.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, actually, maybe one last one. If there's something you could change about Django, or what would that be? Or do you have thoughts on maybe how the future async wave, would that impact Ophonic at all? Or is that not so much?
I don't know. I did not do so much with it since now. Because, I mean, the thing is our processing is done in a different stage. So it's done offline, basically, in the queue. So here mm-hmm. Would not need this async thing, but yeah, I think for user interface improvements, it's of course very very interesting. But I have to play around with it a little bit more, I think.
So, if listeners want to use Ophonic, should they just go to the main website, or where should they be directed?
Yes, sure. So our website is ophonic.com, and yeah, just try our system. So 2 hours per month are for free. And if you have any questions or feedback, we are always very, very happy to get feedback and also error reports and whatever.
Great.
Okay.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for coming on and giving us the time.
Thanks a lot for your time.
Really interesting, Georg. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Ciao.